Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and with us now is one of the members of the New York delegation planning to vote yes on military intervention in Syria as Congress returns today. He is Long Island Democrat Steve Israel. And Congressman Israel, thanks so much for doing this. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning. It's good to be with you, Brian.
Let me ask you first about one of the things in the resolution drafted in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. It stipulates that all non-military options have been exhausted. But have they? Maybe you saw a lot of pressure on the Sunday morning talk shows yesterday to go to the UN first and make Russia and China vote no if they're going to vote no, or indict Bashar Assad as a war criminal using the International Criminal Court or other UN mechanism before taking military action. So has the U.S. really exhausted non-military means as called for in the Senate's own resolution?
Thanks for the question. Several points. First, I am on my way to LaGuardia Airport to fly to Washington to attend a Democratic leadership meeting with Dennis McDonough, the White House Chief of Staff, to make the point that the resolution that's in the House right now is too open-ended. It is too vague, in my opinion. It is too ambiguous, and it needs to be significantly tightened in three areas. Number one, to limit any kind of military operation to degrading the chemical weapons capacity in Syria. Secondly, to guaranteeing that there will be no boots on the ground. And third, to stipulate that this will be a very limited duration. So I'm not going to vote for a completely open-ended resolution. I've been working in the leadership to make sure that this is contained and confined. On the point that you raised about the International Criminal Court and other mechanisms, I actually was one of the first members of Congress to call for the prosecution of Bashar al-Assad by the International Criminal Court. The problem is that the world won't summon Bashar al-Assad to the International Criminal Court. Without that, that would be my preferred strategy. But in the absence of International Criminal Court initiatives, I believe that we are down to a very confined and limited targeted strike at the chemical weapons capacity as a matter of our core national security interests to stop the proliferation of chemical weapons and to send a message that to tyrants around the world that gassing your children is just not acceptable.
And how about since the United States seems more isolated than President Obama and many others might have thought that they were going to be at this point, to go to the UN Security Council and make Russia and China vote no? If they're going to vote no, maybe they'll be so humiliated by the situation as the evidence becomes more and more clear that they would actually vote yes, and then we would be on firmer ground.
I don't believe that Vladimir Putin, under any circumstances, really cares about humiliation. I believe that Russia, principally, has been protecting Syria, has been defending its interests, and therefore the United Nations Security Council isn't capable of producing a resolution.
Well, why not take that step first before actually taking military action?
Because I think it would instead bolster Putin's case that the Security Council has now said that there can be no strike, and you would still have the next morning Bashar al-Assad waking up absolutely empowered to continue his use of chemical weapons. Let's understand that this is not just what happened in August, where 1,400 people were gassed, and that's a conservative estimate. This is a pattern by the Syrian regime. They've done it, depending on the intelligence estimates that you want to believe, anywhere from 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 times. And every time they did it, and people said there was no accountability and they shouldn't be stopped, they did it again, to the point where they did it massively on August 21st. If we're not going to hold them accountable for these actions, then where do these actions end?
Congressman Israel, when you talked earlier about limiting the language of the resolution to make sure there are no boots on the ground, one of the things in the Senate resolution, as you know, is that it specifies no boots on the ground for combat operations, which Correct. Leaves the door open for boots on the ground, that is, American soldiers, during whatever bombing is taking place. Are you troubled by that?
It is a concern, and that's why I'm heading to the White House as we speak to talk about refinements in the language. This has to be a product of consensus. And it has to be a product that reflects the concerns and the values of my colleagues on both sides of the aisle. And so we do have to have a very robust conversation about the wording of the resolution to ensure that it has a slippery slope clause.
And when you say a slippery slope clause, I think a lot of people are concerned about that, that what may start as a limited military action in intent is going to wind up with unintended consequences that's going to make President Obama potentially feel like he has to go further. For example, the Wall Street Journal reported the other day that Iran has directed Shiite militants in Iraq to attack the U.S. embassy in Baghdad if the U.S. attacks Syria. Now, if that happens and Americans in Baghdad are killed, what would the appropriate and necessary response be, in your opinion?
Well, it is very difficult to answer a hypothetical with a hypothetical. The fact of the matter is that the outcome of a situation where Bashar al-Assad continues to escalate and proliferate the use of chemical weapons, that those chemical weapons end up in the hands of Hezbollah, that the ordinary and customary use of chemical weapons as a tool of war becomes accepted by the world and therefore empowers North Korea and Iran. That's a pretty grisly outcome. We have had a 100-year convention in this world since World War I that the use of chemical weapons is not acceptable. If it's not acceptable, then the use of those weapons must be protested, and the use of those weapons must be degraded.
But why is it such an imperative now when it wasn't after past uses of gas like by Saddam Hussein in the 1980s?
Well, in this case, you have a very specific situation in Syria where Bashar al-Assad has shown that he is willing to continue to escalate and broaden the use of chemical weapons in a very unstable part of the world. Secondly, the degrading of the chemical weapons infrastructure, and that's what this resolution needs to be confined to, the degrading of the chemical weapons infrastructure is not just a matter of keeping those chemical weapons or degrading the chemical weapons capability for Bashar al-Assad. It's to degrade the chemical weapons capability for all the sides of this conflict in Syria. I don't want the rebels to be able to permeate that infrastructure. I don't want the regime to continue to use that infrastructure. We ought to do what we can to undermine the use of chemical weapons by any of the sides in this conflict as a core national security interest to the United States.
And again, just to return to the Wall Street Journal scenario for a minute, and I know you got to go in a minute, but what's to say that if somebody does something heinous in response, if Syria follows through or Iran follows through with some of the threats that are out there to attack Israel or this with respect to the U.S. embassy in Baghdad and Americans are killed? I mean, aren't we opening up a very dangerous door here that could lead to more military action and an incredible conflagration over what may have been a mistake by President Obama in the first place by drawing this red line when he really doesn't want to get involved in Syria?
We live in a world of the opening of many dangerous doors and many dangerous hypotheticals. The possibility of some kind of retaliation is understandable, but the reality of a Syrian regime that uses chemical weapons as a daily accepted tool of war, and the reality that Hezbollah and Iran and North Korea and others are empowered to do the same, I believe, requires us to take this very confined and contained and surgical military operation. And we have to protect, obviously, as a military operation, we have to anticipate and protect against options that arise from that.
Congressman, final thing, and by now you're probably
sure
at LaGuardia Airport, so I know you got to go and fly to your job. But is
no worries.
If Congress rejects this resolution, would you suggest that the president go anyway?
I'm not even prepared to go there. Right now, I think we have to form the kind of consensus that we need to pass this resolution. And I'm going to make my views on what happens if the resolution doesn't pass known to, at the White House in about 2 hours.
So you're going to tell that you're not ready to tell us. So you are at least, are you ambivalent about, considering that the president acknowledged that he needs, under the War Powers Act, to go to Congress? Do you think that it would be do you think that it would be legal even for the president to take military action if Congress does not authorize it?
So now you've opened the door to one of my principal concerns, a concern I've had since Ronald Reagan went into El Salvador, and that is a War Powers Act that has become highly dysfunctional, overly ambiguous. And I've actually been working on a modernization and a reform of the War Powers Act so that you wouldn't have these hypotheticals. What I am doing over the next 48 hours or so is working very closely with my colleagues not to reform the War Powers Act. I think we need to get to that, but to reform the resolution that the House will be voting on over the next several days. And that resolution is too open-ended and too ambiguous. So I'm going to focus my efforts on that task, and then we'll broaden it beyond at the proper time.
Congressman Steve Israel, Democrat from Long Island, thank you very much for giving us this time.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you.